This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery, just like Leicester City this season. So the only thing left to say is, you in? Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too. So that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants, 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And now, something completely different.
Watch us on YouTube. Listen on your favourite podcast platform. Or ask your smart speaker to play the podcast Leicester Till I Die.
Subscribe, like, follow and join in now.
Strap yourself in.
Because we're set up, switched on and ready to go.
On Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport, powered by fans.
Right, Chris.
All right, good evening. How the devil are we all? Welcome along. It's been a while since we've done one of these, and I thought, you know what? That young Stephen that comes on to the prediction show with us, you know, the one that doesn't like Tottenham or Arsenal, that's the one, yeah. I thought, you know, we've done all these prediction shows, we've never had a chat about his career and obviously his time at Leicester. So that's what we're going to do tonight. So we're going to have a chat with him first of all, and then please, if you've got any questions for him, stick them in the chat. We'll have a bit of time at the end when I can put some of your questions to him. I'm sure Anthony will be joining us, so he will be asking who was his favourite Arsenal player that he played against, and what was his favourite Arsenal team, and what does he think about Tottenham Hotspur? We will go into that, I'm sure, as well. But it is great to welcome along. Like I say, it was my period. It was my time when I started getting into Leicester City, because he was part of the team that also included a certain Mr. Lineker, who was in the same class as myself. We were in the same, I was certainly in the same maths group. Whatever happened to him? I always wondered. But let's bring him in and say a very, very good evening to Steve. Good evening, sir. How the devil are you?
I'm fine, thanks, Chris. Thank you very much.
Good. Obviously, you do the prediction shows with us, but you are branching out into clothing. And when I say clothing, ladies and gentlefolk, I obviously don't mean, you know, like, you know, the underwear department or anything like that. It's Foxy Seven, and it's coming soon.
It is, mate. Yeah, it was created by my daughter. To be honest. She's 16 and she's into the art world and photography. And I've got a lazy 21-year-old son who doesn't want to work. So we got together and she came up with this nice little idea and this nice little thing of a clothing line for, and she called it Foxy Seven. So we've gone along with it and it's created a lot of interest so far. So hopefully, you know, we're going to start off at the end of the month. And see how it goes.
Brilliant. Well, as I say, you're on the show every week with us with the prediction. We will be announcing it and pushing it for you as soon as you launch it. So keep watching the channel and we will keep you updated with that. You were just a little bit older than me, only a few years. I hate to say. I think you've aged better than me. Born West Bromwich, which of course you can tell from the accent what part of the Midlands you were from. How did you get into the football? I mean, obviously, I presume it was through school, was it?
Yeah, we had a school team called Churchfields, and we went into the Birmingham Boys League on a Sunday, and Aston Villa youth were in there, and they hadn't been beaten for about 5 years, right. And we absolutely hammered them. We beat them 4-1 in the first game, and then 5-1 away in the second game of the season. And then they showed interest, but my dad, bless him, growing up, I could say bloody and bugger in the house, but if I ever said Villa or Wolves, I used to get a slap. And then he wasn't too happy when Villa started showing interest. Mm. And then after the Villa started to show an interest, that's when West Brom became interested. Mm. And being born in West Brom and that and whatever and following them all my life, you know, it was great and I went there.
Your dad's obviously a huge West Brom fan. I remember when mine was old enough, we actually lived in Burnley at the time, and I remember saying to him, look, you know, it'd be great if you supported Leicester because that's my team, but, you know, we don't live in Leicester. If you did really want to support Burnley, I'd understand it because you live in Burnley, but you're not supporting Man United, Chelsea, Liverpool or any of the big teams just because they're always on the telly. But even then, was sort of, because obviously, you know, we know you as the speedy winger that you were. Even at that stage, was that the position you were playing in?
No, I started off as a sweeper. I got the ball to the back, and then I just used to get the ball from the back and just run with it. Mm. And I scored a few goals playing on a Saturday and a Sunday. And it wasn't until I went to West Bromwich Albion that the coach then decided to put me out on the wing, and I never looked back after that.
The rest, as they say, is history. You joined as an apprentice, and wasn't long, you won a trophy.
Yes, we've still got the record up to this day now, FA Youth Cup. We won it in 76, which was, you know, absolutely great, fantastic. Mm. Made some good friends, made some enemies who became friends after. Yeah. I'll tell you about that one after. But that was the start for it. At the club at the time, the manager was Johnny Giles. Mm. And, you had a few Irish internationals playing there. Eamon Dunphy, Ray Tracy, Martin Henderson. And Johnny Giles.
That had been at Leeds under Cluffy, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. And he went back to Ireland and he started off the first professional club. He brought Shamrock Rovers, and it was all non-league then, and no, you know, part-time players. And we became the first professional club in Ireland, Southern Ireland. Mm. And it went well. I was there for 3 years. We won the cup, FA Cup over there, and we played in Europe. It was not like it is now. It was just, you know, the European Cup then.
Yeah.
Not like the tournaments they have now. It was a straight knockout competition. We played Nicosia of Cyprus. We won that one. I scored a cracking goal in Cyprus.
Mm.
And they wouldn't let me out of the country at the airport. They wanted to keep me, sign me, but...
What, because they hated you for scoring or because they wanted you to play for their team?
To be honest, it was a cracking goal. I've never scored one before like that. I just done a little amazing hit it with my left foot and it went top corner. And and they really enjoyed it. And, you know, they wanted me to stay over there, but Johnny Giles wouldn't let them.
Who knows what could have been?
Yeah.
And how far did you get in Europe that season?
We got through to, I think, because you had the preliminary rounds and the thing, I think we went through two rounds. Mm. And then we played Banik Ostrava of Czechoslovakia.
Yeah.
And, God, you know, I was only young then, but they were massive. From the goalkeeper to the centre forward, they were all 6'5" plus, really wide, and they hammered us. 4-1 at home and 5-1 over there, but it was a good experience.
Yeah,
You know,
and I believe I say, and bear with me because you know I am taking a lot of my information here off Wikipedia, so you never know exactly how true that is. You can go in there, obviously, and you know, you scored 500 goals for Leicester. you mentioned there the Irish Cup victory. You had a big part in the goal that won you the game.
Yes, I went on a run, cut into the box, and I was brought down in the box. And Ray Tracy took the penalty from the spot, and we beat Sligo 1-0.
Of course, there was no hint of a dive or no need for any VAR, was there?
Well, the left back of Sligo, till this day, because he spoke to me a couple of years ago and he said, you dived. And no, I didn't.
Which he would, of course, say that, wouldn't he?
Well, you weren't allowed to in those days because, like, to be fair, if you dive like you do now, even your own players would beat you up because it wasn't a thing that you used to do.
No.
So, you know, it was strange, but...
You came back, though, and you actually came back, dare I say, to, and I don't know what your dad thought about this, to Birmingham City.
Yes, came back to Birmingham City. Jim Smith was the manager there at the time. Mm. My dad had no qualms with Birmingham, you know, because I think they were a team that completely opposite to Villa, where at the time Villa had been European champions and stuff like that, and they were like a bit cocky and the fans were a bit cocky and whatever, and you know, but I didn't like that. So you know, you knew the Blues were down to earth, and he was okay with that.
And what brought you back home then, because you're obviously having a great time in Ireland?
To be honest, I'm going back now. I was married when I was 16. I went over on my own because my wife at that time didn't want to go over there. Mm. And after the 2 or 3 years, started to get a bit homesick. Mm. And I just said to Johnny Johnson one day that, you know, I need to go back home. And he says, okay, then go back home, try and find yourself a club and let me know when you do. And then I went back. My old school teacher, bless him, who was the manager at Churchfields, who, you know, who started the journey.
Yeah.
He knew I was back, and he started sending letters and things around to clubs. I went down London to have a trial with QPR. And then I got a phone call from Keith saying that Birmingham City were interested in. So I went to Birmingham, had a week's trial there, and, you know, they sold me straight away, got hold of Johnny Giles, and I think they sold me for £6,000.
No. What, Shamrock sold you for 6,000?
Yeah, Shamrock sold me to Birmingham for 6,000.
Let's be honest with you, we're talking, what, mid-1970s now, so it wasn't to be sniffed at, was it?
Oh, no. Like I say, he'd gone over and brought the club because for all the younger people watching nowadays, that the clubs in my time, they depended on, you know, the gate receipts. There was no big massive money pumped into the clubs like there is now. You had your sponsor's name and that, but didn't go far. So the clubs like had to rely on the gate money. So anything extra was a bonus for the club.
Mm. I mean, things have changed obviously now. I mean, you know, we all say that, you know, it was Jimmy Hill, wasn't it, that sort of got rid of the wage or the maximum wage for footballers. I mean, he could have had no idea where it was going to sort of end up. And, I mean, just the argument that a playing career is very short, you know, that it doesn't last forever. But surely, I mean, they are players these days. They are paid astronomically for what they do. And that's no disrespect to them.
Yeah, I can't knock any modern footballer because, you know, they don't ask for it. They get given it.
Yeah.
But you can see, and probably people might think that I'm talking because, you know, I didn't get the money and the big bucks and whatever, but you can see how it's damaged the game, which from my age now and the people that go up with me, they can see the change. But all the young people now, they can't because they didn't know what football was like back in those days. But you can't relate to the players like you did in our day. They're not approachable, I don't think. I think, you know, you see them all turn up on the coaches with their earphones in and things like that, and they don't come across like our players of our generation.
No.
You know, you could go out on a Thursday night in the pub and you'd be standing next to a footballer, which was part and parcel of the days then.
But, it was usually Frank Worthington as well.
Oh, tell you what, when I went to Birmingham and Frank was there, signing there, man, what a hero. What a hero. The guy was absolutely 100% from his toes right the way up to the top of his head. Fantastic guy.
Yes. Yeah. And rest in peace, because obviously he passed away last year. You were at Birmingham, was it three seasons?
I was there three seasons. I went there, on the trial. I got straight in. My first game was Man City away. I think it was the final game or one of the two games towards the end of the season. And Birmingham got relegated that year. But I scored a header on my debut, which I can't remember going in. I remember it hitting my head.
And then, I don't ever remember seeing you score with a header.
And then the next thing I know, everybody's jumping on me and, oh, what a great header that was, but it just hit me. You know what I mean? So, but no, he was absolutely brilliant. And then I got to play with Archie Gemmell, Colin Todd, Frankie Worthington. Oh, man. Kenny Burns. You know, you go through like a lot of fantastic players.
Those were the days. You're taking me back now through the midst of time. And then you obviously, then that was the time I was sort of, I was leaving school. I left school in 77. And you joined Leicester in 1981. How did that come about?
That came out about really, it just hit me because I went in on the train on the Monday and Jim Simpson called me in. Because I was doing well for Birmingham. I wasn't in the team all the time, but I kept coming on as sub and scoring. And I was doing really well. And he just said, we've had an interest from Leicester City. They want to sign you. And would you go over and have a chat with Jock Wallace? And I went, yeah, no problem at all. And then came over to meet Jock. And oh, what a guy he was. And he, you know, he sold me the club within 3 minutes, and the warmth he showed, and because he had got a rugged roughness, which but he did know how to talk to players, and he did know how to make you feel good, and I think he was a brilliant man manager, and like I say, he sold me the club within 3 minutes, and signed for Leicester, and I think they paid, I think it was 80,000 for me.
Oof, wow. And, I mean, you said there he knew how to talk to players, but as a player, could you understand the bloody word he was saying?
To be honest, for the first 6 months, I couldn't understand half the team because they were mostly Irish and Scots.
Yeah.
Paul Ramsey to the day now, I still can't understand what he says because he's broad Irish and how fast he talks. I have to try and slow him down a bit. But no, because like when I played for Shamrock, they used to play in the green and white hoops, didn't they?
Yeah, cool,
and,
yeah.
And then I'd pinch the shirt when we won the cup final, which, you know, you couldn't do because we only had one strip for the whole season. Yeah. But I managed to keep the top out. And I think it was Paul Ramsey advised me to wear this in training one day. And
I know what's coming.
Oh, here I am in the gym with this, you know, and we got our tracksuit tops and I took it off and got this green and white hoops top on. And I tell you what, Jock just let the players get me. You know, because they battered me. They did absolutely batter me. It was in the gym. And I'm saying they meant it as well. They were kicking, punching, smashing me against the wall. And he wouldn't let me take the top off. He wouldn't let me take the top off. He says, you've got to be punished now for the rest of the training session. And I came off black and blue. I did. Black and blue.
Literally, they were really, it wasn't playful then.
Oh, God, no. And the chief instigator was Alan Young. Bless his heart. You know, like you say, Mad Rangers play and whatever, and yeah, they let me know about it.
I was going to say, because obviously Jock was at Rangers and had won everything at Rangers. It was the biggest surprise, sort of, when he resigned from Rangers and came down to Leicester, which were then a second tier team. For those of us of a certain age, it was called Division Two. but he was Rangers through and through, wasn't he? Really, but. Did you? I've got to ask you. Were you part? And I think, if I remember, you were part of the old. Was it the hill or the mountain they called it?
To be fair, I just got there just after they'd done it, which is a blessing, I think, to be honest, because the lads were telling me that how steep it was, and he used to stand on the top with a stick in his hand, and if you didn't get up there in time, he used to whack your hands and send you back down, and. Their part of the training was, why I was there, is that if you weren't sick in training, you weren't training properly. Wow. So you had to be sick to prove that, especially pre-season, that you were putting the work in. Which I can't see the modern days doing now.
Well, we moan about players sort of being ill, in, you know, getting, you know, muscle problems and everything in training, and at least you don't get hit with sticks there. But it actually stopped the hill, had he then? Because, like I say, there's photos and videos of it out there, and it looked, my God, it looked. It must have been knackered when it came to match day.
I tell you, there was times when in pre-season he used to take us away to the beaches and make us run in the sand and in the water, and. It was intense. I remember West Brom coming over. We went to Lillyshore for a week, and we started training at 9 o'clock. And then halfway through the morning, West Brom would turn up on a pitch opposite at about 11 o'clock. Johnny Giles was like more of playing football. You had to work when you were playing football. That's where you got your strength and your speed from. And then we finished 12 o'clock. And then we'd be carrying on till about 1, stopping up some dinner, and then back out in the afternoon. And that was pre-season training for us, like up the hills and everything and whatever. Mm-hmm. And Jock insisted on, you know, being fit so you could last the 90 minutes.
Because, of course, those were the days of only one substitute.
Yes, one substitute, and I think it was great for the game, to be honest. Mm. I think he's starting to spoil it now with having... You know, you'll probably have 10 subs next season, the way things are going.
Well, but, if they have 10 subs, you know Brendan will only use 6. So don't get me started on that one.
Yeah, we probably will use 6.
But it meant you had to get it right at the start, didn't you?
That's right. And I think that's why Jock was so good because, probably Gordon Milne as well, because in those days you didn't go out and sign anybody for the sake of it. You went out and signed a player that fitted into the way, the style of play you wanted to play.
Yeah.
And I think that's why Leicester got its strength, because you were always signing players to play how the team plays and how you fit in.
Yeah.
Whereas you look at the teams now, they buy big names and then try and change the tactics to the big name they've just signed. So it was good. It was good for the fans because, like, I think we only had 14, 15 in the squad. And then you had to play through your injuries. I remember playing and I pulled my thigh in the first half. I think it was against Tottenham. And I had a cortisone injection to see me through the rest of the game. And then after that, I was out for about three months because all torn ligaments in my thigh. That's how it used to be.
Yeah. And I've got to say about Jock, I mean, obviously, you know, were you there when Alan Young was there? Were you there at the same time?
Yes, yeah. Youngie was the father of the club. He welcomed me into the club.
Because he absolutely adored, in fairness, Jock Wallace. He wouldn't have a word said against him. And was it a case of practical jokes when you arrived? Was it, you know, itching powder in the underpants and what have you? Or when you say he welcomed you, was it a nice welcome?
I'll tell you what, was it a brilliant welcome? Because they were like a family. Mm. Like you say, nobody say a bad word against Jock, but nobody say a bad player against any of the players. Mm. And I think that in our day, that's why we were so strong. And because you had the nucleus of a lot of Scottish players there, it helped. It helped in a way because, like, you were coming into a family. Mm. They were, and they welcomed you. They welcomed you, and there was no stars, no egos. It was just like a machine, really. You were just a part in a machine for them.
Yes, yeah. And I've got to ask you, obviously, Jock Wallace, Leicester City, FA Cup run. You're 4 foot nothing, but it's the only time, I think, still in history where a team had three different goalkeepers on in the one game. Obviously, we had Mark Wallington, who got injured but tried to get on. This, of course, was the Shrewsbury quarterfinal, which I wasn't able to go to because I was switching with a co-worker, and she would go to one week game, I would go to the next, and we'd do it in runs. But I did get to go to the semi-final, which unfortunately we lost, obviously, to those who must not be mentioned from North London.
Yes. Yes. I'll mention them.
that game, I can remember because at the time I worked for WH Smiths, and we could hear the cheering when we came out because the game was still going on. But Mark Wallington got injured, tried to carry on because he'd gone numerous games without sort of not playing, and he obviously didn't want to come off. Youngie went on, went up for a ball, and it seemed to sort of fall over the defender and hurt himself, obviously, when he fell. Now, like I say, you're not the tallest player, I'm sure, in that squad at the time. How come you were picked to go in goal?
I think in training, I used to mess about a bit, and like before training started, you know, I was get the gloves on and people would shoot at me and whatever. Mm. And I'd done a couple of good saves, to be honest. And so they always said, like, you know, if you've got a problem, you know, I could go in goal. Mm. But I think on that day of that game, Shrewsbury were physical. You know, they were really physical.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Yeah. You watch the slow motion tackle that Bates done on Wallington, and if you slow it at really slow motion, you can see the big chunk of his thigh flying through the air where he's left a big hole in his thigh. And they were tough. They were tough physical. And yes. I think he wanted a big fella in goal because, you know, he was either this way or that way in the game. It could have gone either way. Mm. And when he got injured, that was my chance. I went in. I did one good save off a free kick.
Yeah.
Told all my mates about it. Watch it on Match of the Day, this save. And when the game was on, they'd cut it in the highlights and I was gutted.
Typical. But I don't think you or Youngie conceded a goal, did you?
No. That was a question on Question of the Sport on TV. There was a goal with seven, a game with seven goals, which two keepers didn't let in a goal.
Yeah.
And that was me and Youngie. Like I say, when he came back out and I went in, he went up front, got his breath back, and then Jock says, right, want you back in goal? Mm-hmm. And he went back in goal. I put my shirt back on, went on to the right wing. Ball came out to me within a couple of minutes, run down the wing, crossed it, and there was Jimmy Morrow's bang. And that was just winning.
I was going to say you preempted me there, but yeah, you know, as soon as you were taken back onto the pitch, you set a goal up. I mean, you're saying then that you were like, you know, you played in goal a bit in training and after training and what have you. Was there any bit of you that wanted to stay in goal, or when you saw Youngie coming towards you, were you thinking, great, yeah, get out on the pitch? Oh, no, on the.
I had no choice because even with the crowd there, you just heard this one big massive Scottish voice shouting, "Linex, get out, Youngie, back in." And that was
so, fair enough.
You didn't argue with him. What he said was gospel.
Well, Jock was a goalkeeper himself, of course, wasn't he?
He was, yeah.
You know, I can imagine, and obviously I used to speak to Youngie a lot, and I hope he's well. I know he's not been so well recently, but I hope he's doing okay. But it was a great motivator. Like you say, you know, if he said jump, you said how high. But he just had this way of motivating. What was he like as a tactician?
Like I say, he was good because he brought players for the positions, and he wanted you to attack people, I think, and he kept emphasising that the best way to defend was attack. Mm. And if you kept attacking people, the less chance they got to attack on you. Mm. And that's what we used to do. And he always used to say, and make sure that we worked hard, we outworked the opposition. And I think over the 3 or 4 years that we did it with Jocky, you know, it proved to be good because, you know, Liverpool couldn't beat us. We were there bogey team. And some other big clubs, Arsenal, Tottenham at the time, we beat all of them as well. So we were unlucky. We just weren't that consistent enough to, you know, stay in the top positions. But it was hard then because every team was hard to play against.
Mm. But I think that season, although we came straight back down, I think you mentioned Liverpool there. I think who were probably, was it Shankly at the time or had he moved on for Paisley? Yeah. Shankly, right. But I think we actually beat them home and away. We were the first team to win at Anfield for however many seasons and the first team to do the double over them. And I think that season as well, I think we beat them 2-1 in one game and scored all three goals, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, and I remember, I think it was a Tuesday night when we played at Filbert Street, we drew 3 each, and I scored an absolute cracker in that game. Mm-hmm. And I did have it on the old tapes, you know, the VCR tapes.
Yeah.
And I gave it to my mum and dad to keep for me. And my dad, bless him, because, like, he was too idle to buy a new tape. You could put sellotape over the back. And where he brought the thing off to stop it taping over, he put some sellotape over it. And he used to tape all the birds in the garden. And then I went around there 1 week to get the tape, and there it was, taped over. As soon as I put it in, you got sparrows and you got bloody robins and you got magpies. And,
when you said birds for a minute, I thought you meant...
Oh, yeah.
Come and have a look at my son playing football. You
know? I wouldn't have minded if it was the other sort, but, you know, the only tits you got to see was blue tits and things like that, and one of the little tits.
But, yeah, but proper birds, we should say, as in the feathered variety. I remember you saying, when we did have a chat once, and you were saying about, I mean, it was so different then. And I always remember a scene in the, obviously, the film about Brian Clough playing at Leeds, the Damned United, where Brian Clough was actually polishing the ashtrays, and each player had an ashtray next to his you know, towel or whatever in the changing room. I mean, you can't imagine that these days, can you? I remember you gave it a story about Mark Wallington smoking when he was listening to a team talk.
Oh, yeah, because, like, the dressing room was really small then, and you had the toilet just at the end. And Mark Wallington at half-time and whatever and the beginning of the game used to sit on the toilet. You could see his knees, you know, sticking out from the wall because the door was open. But he'd sit on there and the cigarette while Jock was giving the team talk. And that was in the changing room.
Different times.
But what a great keeper. What an absolute great, great keeper.
I don't think he ever got the credit he deserved.
I don't think so because, you know, he was following some good goalkeepers, wasn't he? Gordon Banks and Shilton was around and, you know, Ray Clements, people like that. And I think he was, if not as good or better, because he just didn't get the breaks like, you know, people do in football. And I think it was like being there at the right place but the wrong time.
I mean, obviously it's two huge names to follow at the club. But, I mean, he always got on. I can remember being, you know, stood behind him in the cop, and, you know, when we're playing and having a chat about his bald patch, not thinking that sort of all these years later I'd have my own under the hat, you know. He was a, you know, I mean, you looked the other day at Aaron Ramsdale when he got kicked by a Spurs fan. For winding the fans up, but whether you were home or away, I do think he was really unfortunate and didn't necessarily. But a lot of that team didn't get the credit they deserved, did they?
No, and I don't think it's being big-headed saying that. You know, you had some great, great players at the time, and I think a lot of us were unlucky to not go further.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things. It's football. You can't go out saying how good you are yourself. You have to let people judge what they see, and that's how it was in those days.
Yeah, and what was I going to say? You played with some of the sort of, from Leicester's point of view, great sort of fun. Mentioning, you know, my old schoolmate Gary Lineker. I have to drop that in every now and then. You know, when you start a new job and they always say, like, say something about you that nobody will believe. That's always the one I use. Alan Smith, Youngie. Who was your favourite to play with? You know, who sort of got you the most and, you know, knew where you were going to put the ball? And
I think, to be honest, and this is what I try and tell my son, you know, no matter how good you are, I think you have to have a good understanding with your players and your teammates, because you see a lot of players now, they'll take two or three people on, they'll get a chance to put the ball in, the forwards will make the run, then they stop and take an extra touch, and that's where, you know, you get a lot of confusion. But the reason me, Alan and Smudger hit it off is that if they know I was going down the line, as soon as I got past the fullback, I was whipping the ball in. And Gary always used to come front post and Smudger used to go far post. And, you know, we scored a lot of goals between us.
Yes. Oh, yeah. And I heard a story that Jim Melrose wasn't always the most popular.
Well, to be fair, he was another one as well, you know, that came down from Scotland.
Yeah.
But he wasn't like in the Rangers clan, because I think he came from, was it St. Pat's, is it? St. Patrick up there.
Right.
And big Alan Young and Jimmy didn't hit it off.
You can guess where the story came from then, can't you, from that?
Yeah, and they didn't see eye to eye. But Jimmy was a good player, a good finisher. But you know, I think I don't want to say that Alan or anybody or any other lads had an influence of what, you know, on Jock or whatever, but
no,
I think Jock could see that they weren't getting on and whatever. And I think in the end, I think they sold Jimmy to, was it Coventry?
We mentioned the famous quarter final, but I can remember going on the train to Villa Park for the semi-final. The day, I think it was, that I remember the Sun headline on the newspaper that day saying it's war because the Argentinians had invaded the Falklands at the same time. And, of course, they'd got a couple of Argentinians, Osvaldo Ardiles and Ricky Villa, in their side. It wasn't to be our day that day, was it?
No. No. We were bouncing because, the cup run we'd had and the Shrewsbury game. Mm. And we really, really fancied ourselves, against them. But when we got out there, Young got injured early on. So, his movement wasn't very good. Yeah. And then we did make one substitute. And then I think Young had to go off. So that left us with 10 men for a bit. But it was just the day. Nothing seemed to go right. The pitch was heavy. It was like playing on Blackpool Beach. There was that much sand on it. And, they got the breaks. We're lucky for Ian to score an own goal and that.
Yes. But,
on the day, I'm sorry to say, but Glenn Hoddle will run the show.
Mm, yeah. I've actually got Ian coming on in a few weeks, so I'm sure I'll mention that to him, as much as he hates talking about it. But so was it... I was trying to think who broke the leg, because one of our players broke the leg.
Tommy Williams broke his leg.
Tommy Williams, that was it, yes.
And then he was out for a long time, and then first day back in training, he broke it again.
Yes.
So he was out a bit longer, but... Yeah, I felt sorry for him.
But it was a great run, though. It was a great run. And, of course, then a complete change because Jock went back to Scotland and Motherwell. And talk about chalk and cheese. I don't think you could have probably, from the outside looking in, have got a manager at the completely other end of the scale when Gordon Milne came in.
Yeah. It was hard to adjust to at first. Like you say, I think we had the rawness of Jock and the Scots, but then we had the calmness of Gordon Milne when he came in. Mm. And he brought a few players in. And then it changed, but it changed in a good way. We didn't lose anything that we had with Jock. It was just implemented in a different way.
Mm.
And, I think then, to be honest, that's when you're seeing Leicester play better football.
Yeah,
and that was a good thing.
And was it Gordon that took us back up again?
It was, yeah.
Yes.
We had a fantastic run towards the end. Fulham were up there. I always remember the game because they were playing Derby.
Yes. Yes.
And you look back now. I look back on YouTube and that game was on and the crowd were right on the line, on the line. And as the players were running down the side, there was feet coming out and kicking people. And they kicked one of the Derby players and it was in the last 2 minutes. And then the game was over. We got promotion, but then they put an objection in and they wanted a rematch.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Away days are great, but when you can't play away, there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus. Serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
We were in, I think we got took away at the end of the season on a pre-season thing. Mm. And then we heard that it had been turned down and we got promotion.
Malcolm McDonald was Fulham manager, wasn't he?
He was, yeah. He was, to be honest, a great player. I loved him as a player. But what a crybaby as a manager.
Well, I heard, I don't know if this is true, that he was one of the first people to ring and congratulate, but maybe that's just urban myth.
He did, but he made a lot of it to try and get a replay, which I don't think they deserved. You know, if you're going to win the game, you win it in the time allotted.
It was only 2 minutes, I think, wasn't it? It was 2 minutes,
but you know, you look at the crowds in them days. They came from everywhere. Yeah. And it was absolutely rammed, and they couldn't stop the game, or they'd never got it restarted to get the crowd back behind the wall, but they just let it play on for the last 5 minutes or something like that. But, no.
Was it this time when you did your famous, as I put in the post advertising this, when you became an Olympic swimmer?
Yes, under Gordon Milne, yeah.
We
played Southampton, and I tell you what, the weather, the heavens just opened, and it came down and down and down, and we'd started the game, and it was just like about 3 inches deep. You know, you passed the ball, and it went 6 inches. And it was great at the time. It was lovely. We were really enjoying it. And then I was running with the ball, and, you know, I got caught from behind, and then the ball went one way, and I just fell down onto my stomach, and I just started doing the breaststroke to catch up with the ball. They kept showing up for a bit after.
I'm going to say it's still a classic. I had it somewhere, and I wanted to show it, and I can't remember where it is. Otherwise, I'd have put it up. But yeah, it's great seeing you do it, because literally you could. It was that deep; you could spread the water, couldn't you?
Oh, it was unbelievable. But the funny thing is, when the game got abandoned, 10 minutes after it got abandoned, all the water had gone. It was so weird, you know. The lights went out, the people went off, and the rain had stopped, and we went out, all the water had just disappeared. So it was just because it came down that fast and that heavy at that time.
Yes.
You couldn't go anywhere. But 10 minutes after they'd called abandoned the game, the pitch was all right.
You never thought of that as another career then?
Oh, no, because at my time then they had the budgie smugglers. You know, you didn't have the big knee-length shorts now, and I couldn't fancy myself
in the budgie smugglers.
The shorts we used to wear them days are like really, really small and tiny and tight.
Yeah. And again, you may correct me on this one, but according to Wikipedia, 213 appearances for Leicester, 57 goals. You were the Riyad Mahrez of your day, weren't you?
I actually think
you were. That's what I think of you as.
I wasn't as skillful as him, to be honest.
Well.
But like you say, modern football now is different. But I was brought up from an early age that you give 100%. And I think if you give 100%, even if you have a bad game, then the fans can put up with that. They'll accept that because, you know, you see that you're trying. And I think that's the frustration now with the current times at Leicester at the moment. You know, the players are there, the good players, but they don't give enough satisfaction to the fans, and I think that's where the frustration's coming from.
Yes. And then there's a bit of a strange thing, because Gordon Milne moved upstairs, and Brian Hamilton was sort of running the show, and that didn't really work out, did it?
No, like I said, I'd been there 6-7 years. I'd got player of the season. We played the first game of the season. I can't remember who it was against. I'd done well, got man of the match. Mm-hmm. And then I got called in on a Monday after training, and then he told me I wasn't in his plans. And that was me, you know, gutted, absolutely gutted, because it came from nowhere, you know, because I've been doing well. I was enjoying my time there. And he just turned up and said, "You're not in my plans." And that was me gone, finished. I went out on loan to Birmingham City. I was getting some good reviews there. I was playing really well for Birmingham. Leicester were having a bad time. And then I got recalled off the loan period. We played West Ham away. I scored. And then I went into Gordon Milne on the Monday. So I cannot play for this geezer. And I was sold to West Brom the next day for, I think it was £6,000.
I mean, what? Because Brian Hamilton, he's not remembered as one of our most successful managers, was he? I mean, who did he replace you with?
I think Tony Seeley came in. He had Tony Seeley and he had Ian Banks. And they seem to be the two wingers that he preferred.
Yeah.
And like I say, and that's the thing that hurt me the most, I never got to say ta-ra to the fans or anything because I don't think a lot of the fans knew what had gone on in the background.
No.
And, because I absolutely loved it there and it was great and it came as a big, big shock. But what can you do?
I know. It's almost sometimes when a new manager comes in, they've just got to put their own mark on the team. Yeah, and that was one of the things when Claudio came in, you know, after Nigel Pearson. He didn't, well, he was known as the Tinker Man, but he didn't sort of, you know, drop everybody and bring his own players in immediately. And I just think when you've, you know, when you've got somebody playing well and then the manager does that, then I think you've got to question sort of the manager themselves, you know. But you were back to your hometown club.
Yes, went back there. That was under Ron Atkinson. You know, big Ron as you go through the Man United and everybody saying what a great manager he was. But I found completely different when I went to West Brom.
It was that post-Man United, wasn't it, for him?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we didn't get on. And then I signed for Cardiff, then my last club.
Mm. You were quite, was it two seasons at Cardiff?
Two seasons at Cardiff. I'd signed a 4-year deal. I used to still live up here and travel down every day.
Wow.
And Frank Butters was a manager at the time. He then left. And I can't remember his name now, who took over. But he started to get rid of all the oldest players that were in the team. I think we played Bristol City on the Saturday. We lost 2-1. And he said, right, I want you in training on the Sunday. And then I travelled down on the Sunday, 2 hours to get there. And we had a team talk for 10 minutes. And he says, I'll see you tomorrow. And then I thought to myself, I've had enough. I think I was 32, 33 then. Mm. And I just decided to quit. Quit halfway through the contract. Went straight into the pub business. And I had to pay £500 FIFA international clearance to play for the pub team because Cardiff held my contract for the last 3 years.
So, that's a classic. That one, you had to pay the pub team and you had to get international clearance. Yeah,
because they kept my contract and they wouldn't let me sign for anybody else because I just walked out. I said, that's it, me. I'm finished, retired.
Mm. And, I suppose there comes a time, doesn't there, when you just know.
I think so. I think you look at Ronaldo now. Bless him. I think he should have got out a couple of years ago when he was still sharp, and I don't think he would have had the beast in his head from his last season or last few games at Man United and before then. And I thought, I always watch the TV and, you know, you see old singers on the telly and you see old dance and you think, why are you still doing it? You know, you try and leave where you've still got a bit of level where you used to play.
Yes. Yeah. And pub business, enjoy it, not enjoy it?
Yes, I did enjoy it. I did that. And then while I was in the pub business, I went into security. I was a store detective for Bridgetown Stores.
Okay.
Absolutely loved that. What a great job that was. Mm. The people, no disrespect to people or whatever, but we caught a couple of doctors, we caught a policeman, we caught teachers, it was eye-opening. And that was good. And then my brother started up his own business and he went into the exhibition business. And then he said they were looking for some painters. And can I help him out for a week? And I went there for a week, totally enjoyed it, to be honest, and ended up doing that for the next 20 odd years.
Right. And I've got to say, at what point, and we, I love this from for you, because on the prediction show, it doesn't matter, well, it didn't up until recently, who Arsenal and Tottenham were playing, you went for the opposition just because it was Arsenal and Tottenham. When did your hatred of the, maybe hatred's a bit strong, but where did your dislike for those two teams come from?
When I was playing against them, to be honest. You know, it was the arrogance at the time because they were London clubs. They were thought, you know, there was no clubs from London upwards. You know, it was like a thing, and there was an arrogance that was there. Mm. And I had a couple of run-ins. I had a couple of Garth Crooks. I had a run-in there. I had a run-in with, I think it was Kenny Sampson at Arsenal. Oh, yeah. You know, and to be honest, and no disrespect and whatever, but... And I always tell this to my son, you see people on the TV that play for England and things, you know, and you grow up watching them, and then you're on the pitch playing against them, and you think to yourself, God, how does this guy play for England?
Yes.
Because, you know, and I might be just disrespectful saying that, but, you know, me playing Arsenal was one of the easiest games I've ever had because Kenny Sampson was good at going forward, but he was crap at defending. And when you got in his face and went past him, you know, it was great for me.
Yeah. And, I mean, obviously, I expect that you sort of keep an eye on West Brom as well. But you've seen where Leicester have gone. Did you ever think you'd see us win the Premier League, win the FA Cup? I mean, you came, you know, that close under, you know, when you were there. But are we becoming a little bit too... blinded by our own success, do you think, as fans?
I think in the modern game, yes, because, you know, like I say, a lot of the people now haven't seen the hardship of before, and the older generations, like myself and whatever, that have seen the bad times can remember there's more bad times than good times.
Yeah.
But Leicester seemed to have that great journey for 3 or 4 years where nothing went wrong, to be honest. You could see the train starting, and you could see where the train's finished. And I think it was—I never saw it coming, to be honest. Winning like everybody else, winning the Premiership, but they just grew and grew and grew in strength. And I think that was a good thing for them, but a bad thing as well, because they had a system and a style which won them the Premier League, and they had the players playing together doing it. But then, after that, you start to try and change things. And then when you start to try and change things, that's when the wheels started to wobble on the journey. And I think, you know, they let a lot of good players move on. And they say, like, say, in the modern game now, they went for a few other people just because of the name of the person. And, and you know, that's what happens a lot of the time.
Yes. Yeah. And just to let people know, and one of the first shows I ever did with you, we did the watch along. Do you remember for the Leicester Nottingham Forest FA Cup match? Yeah. And which we did. And I always blame you for the fact that we lost. It was a bad omen. But I've got to say, good news is Nottingham Forest have lost the first leg of their semi final 3-0. So it does look like they are out. Football as it is, though, at the moment, I mean, it's better than it was, because obviously I can remember when I used to go down to Filbert Street and they had the Pens. I can remember going to watch a game against Chelsea, and it was a Friday night because Tigers were at home on the Saturday, and they were in, their fans were blue and white, we were blue and white, and they broke through from Pen 1 into Pen 2 where we were, and then Leicester went and scored, which was, Leicester never do what you want them to do, but Chelsea sort of equalised, and I remember going down at half-time thinking, I'm just not enjoying this, and I literally wanted to leave, and I couldn't get out because they locked you in. I mean, so for comparing it to there, it is obviously a lot better now, but it's no longer, I don't think it's, maybe it's my age, I don't know, but it's no longer a people's game, is it?
No, Sky have took it over now. It's just a play thing for Sky. I've said this a couple of times on your show and wherever now, and you'll see as the time goes on now that Sky are making a lot of programs on the side to do with football. I think they instigated the January transfer window just to create a TV thing and a bit of whatever. But, you know, and all these stats they keep putting up, and I think it's absolutely ridiculous. I think, me growing up and whatever, you always had enough money because it wasn't expensive. It was a working man's sport. You had enough money to go down the pub, have a drink, meet your mates, go and watch the game. And then there was excitement on the pitch and off the pitch. And I'm not saying, you know, I condone violence and whatever, but, you know, you used to get a lot of aggro, not always violent, but, you know, that created an atmosphere. And I think that's what the excitement of that on the pitch and on and off the pitch was a part of football, and it was great. But nowadays, you know, it's all corporate. You have to sit where they tell you. You can, and there's no, you know, I hate modern football, to be honest, because every game to me now, and I'm trying not to be disrespectful, but every game to me seems like Groundhog Day, because every team now plays the same way, and it's all about systems and passing the ball sideways, passing the ball backways. You can't tattle. And the worst thing that really grinds me is that you'll see a player go down holding his face, then they'll show you a slow motion of the incident, and he's hitting under his armpit or halfway down the side of his back. And you think, why are you rolling around holding your face?
Mm.
And, you know, they've got all the modern technology and all the modern health things now. They wear plastic studs and whatever, but every tackle they seem to make is a foul. They're all standing there saying, I want a yellow card, and then I think I've seen, the record I've seen this year is 11 rolls when somebody's gone over, and they're rolling around on the floor, and you think, oi, there's a stretcher coming on here now, and then 2 seconds later, he's standing up as though nothing's happened. No, it's like watching the old wrestling where you knew what was coming because that's how they rehearsed it. And I think it drives me nuts.
You can't compare footballers with rugby players, can you? Because what rugby players get up and go off. But I don't know. I mean, I have Elton Wellesby on the show, as you probably know, and I love watching on ITV4. Unfortunately, I always seem to miss it. But the Big Match Revisited.
Yeah.
And when you see, I mean, first of all, when you see some of the pitches, I mean, they were like mud wrestling venues sometimes. And we talk about the one, you know, when you played Southampton when you were swimming. So the pitches obviously are a lot better. But when you look, if they played like they did then now, you'd end up with five a side and probably even less.
To be honest, I can't see, you know, they play on carpets nowadays. Mm. And, you know, I saw somebody miss over the weekend or something. He's looking at the floor as though it's bubbled. And I'm thinking, how can you look at the floor? It's a carpet.
Yes.
But, we used to play at Old Trafford and that, and in September, there was no grass on the pitch.
Mm.
And, you know, you play on rock hard, frozen pitches and mud baths, but you still had a cracking, you know, the cracking games and that. Mm. And I always remember that for people, you know, that's around my age, when Hereford played in the FA Cup.
Oh, yes.
And Hereford scored that scream, and look at the state of the pitch then.
Yeah. But
that was football. And that was a football, and it was a leveller. Mm. And I watched the FA Cup this year where the big teams go to the smaller clubs where they haven't got, you know, they've got proper grass pitches. And they look like Bambi on ice. You know, you can see the difference in the stature and the way they move and that. And,
yes.
That's why I always like the FA Cup, because, you know, the little teams against the big teams.
It is a leveler, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, I always remember the Keith Weller goal against Luton time, and what he did. But on the pitch, on that pitch, I mean, like you said, it'd have been messy these days if he'd been playing on this pitch, wouldn't he? I mean, how he could do that on, like you just said, on those pitches, it's and how you guys played on it is unreal. One thing you mustn't miss, though, we'll end on this, and I do appreciate you coming on. One thing you mustn't miss is the baths.
Oh, mate, they used to be great, you know. honest to God, you used to come off in the game, and it was that deep. It was like diving in a swimming pool. And, you know, you'd have the odd things floating past sometimes. But
No, that's what I was worried about.
Sandwiches and bottles and things like that that was in there. But, no, it was great. It was, you know, you could – that's how it used to be, but nowadays it's that clean and whatever, and anybody's scared of catching anything. And, you know, like I had the honour of, like, when I went down to Leicester, they showed me around the dressing room and how big it is now. And, you know, and they got TVs on the wall that you just go up, and if you press the TV, whoever your opponent is will come up on there, and he'll tell you who his favourite player he passes to and how many times he does this, how many times he does that. And unbelievable what they've got at the, you know, things now.
It is a different world, isn't it? It is a
unbelievable.
It moves on. I do feel like we're the two guys out of, you know, the Muppets, you know, sitting in the box, going like, or Monty Python. You know, when I was a lad, I used to live on in a box in the middle of the road, and all that. But
we've been through this, see, and this is the thing I keep throwing back at people. I'd like to say, to the modern day fans, is that just try a season where you've only got 12 players and you have got no transfer window, and see how the season goes out, and see if they like it. And I think, to be honest, they would enjoy it. Mm. They would enjoy it because, you know, and I can't understand why people keep going on saying that we need to spend money, we need to spend money. I've said before, if you go to the bank and you ask for a mortgage and they say, I can only give you this much, why the hell do they keep letting clubs spend millions and millions and millions, which they're never going to get back?
Mm.
And then, you know, so many players for 100 million and stuff like that. Crazy.
I was actually talking to a friend about this the other day, and I said, if a club's in trouble, and you've just mentioned it, I think there, it's a case of let's buy our way out of it.
Yeah.
You know, let's not look at what we're doing wrong that isn't helping these players progress. We must buy our way, we must refresh the team, and you know, it's like, if you have such a player these days can have such a short shelf life. I mean, you know, the players that are in the Leicester squad at the moment, a lot of those were sort of, you know, won the FA Cup 2 or 3 years ago when we were being lauded as one of the best teams in the league. And you don't become bad overnight, but you've got to buy. And I know it's a case of keeping up with Joneses, but I do sometimes think it is not necessarily ruining football, but it's taking the tacticians, that side of it, out.
They're taking the individual skill out of it. I don't think you're allowed to, at an early age now, show and... My son proved this. He was at Warsaw for 13 weeks. And you could see, like, I didn't tell him who I was, and I let him do it on his own. But you could see over the 13 weeks, they were coaching systems into him and stopping him doing what he was good at.
Yeah.
And then I went up to the coach, and I said to him, I says, how long have you had these players? And cockedly, he said, I've had them 7 years. And I said, well, has any moved on? He went, not really, one or two. And then for some reason, I do not know to this day why I said it, and I felt a prat after. I said to him, well, have a look at yourself. And he turned around and said to me, well, who are you? What do you know about football? And I just said to him, Google me, you twat. I walked off, and then my son's come out to me. He says, Dad, why have you just said that? And I said, son, I don't even know, because you don't know who I am. So, you know. But that's how I felt at the time, because
I can you know, see where you were coming from.
Yeah. Because if you buy a player now, and I can guarantee if Leicester buy a player, he'll only look the same as what they've got now, because they play sideways, they play backwards. You know, they're not buying individual players with the skill factor. And like you say, a lot of players at Leicester have got the skill factor, but not being allowed to play it through the tactics and the systems. Mm. And that's the problem.
The funny thing is that, because, and do, if anybody's watching, do check out the BBC Leicester webpage yesterday for my Tuesday talking point. And I actually made, it was very tongue-in-cheek, but just based on what you said there, we've signed this new player, Victor Christiansen. And I've spoken to a guy from Copenhagen BT or Denmark BT, which is one of their equivalents of News Corp. And I spoke to one of the guys that runs the FC Copenhagen Supporters Club. And they were just, they sold the player to me, literally. They were so gushing about him. And I wrote in my piece for the BBC this week that how long will it be until Brendan Rodgers drags that out of him, that creativity, and gets him just passing around the back and saps the life and individuality out of him. And it was a bit tongue-in-cheek, but I can almost see it happening.
You can, to be honest. And, you know, Brendan probably knows more than I do about the modern game. But,
of course, yeah.
You know, there's a lot of people that sit in the crowd and know exactly how we feel the same, because they can see the frustration. They can see. I took my lad to a few years ago to watch West Brom, and Berahino was playing for West Brom. Oh, okay. And, you know, he was supposed to be a winger with a bit of dazzle, take people on. But he got the ball every time. He just stopped it and he passed it back. And you could see within 30 seats all round us either way, people screaming, take him on, take him on. But he wouldn't. And the thing I can say now after watching the last few weeks, you look at Rashford. He first come on the scene, he was brilliant and he was getting reacted. He was a great player. Then for a few seasons, you could see he was being coached out of him. But now, over the last few weeks, now he's come back, and the goal he scored again tonight, he's doing what he used to do. And look how good a player he's looking now. And I think that people should look at that now and say, right, why does now winger do that? Why is now winger told to do that? Why is now players told to do that?
Mm.
And I think that's the only time you'll see a difference.
Yes, yeah. Steve, it's been fascinating. I love talking about the old times, mainly because I am old. But I really appreciate you coming on, as I always do with the prediction show, which I have to say, there's a new leader of. Now, you know, I mean, Brad's been bragging all these weeks about how he's, you know, how he's doing well in the prediction league. I really don't know how to say this.
I don't know, it's so difficult not to look smug at this point.
He had you beat him this week. He got 2 points this week. So if you're watching, Brad, you know, those that crow early, crow last, or whatever the saying is. But thank you so much for coming on, Steve. I loved having these chats, and I love doing the shows with you. Foxy Seven, your new clothing range out at the end of the month.
Yes, it's not all sports gear. It's stuff for everybody. I'm hoping it takes off for me daughter and my son's sake, because they're born idle and they won't do any job. So,
well,
I'm too old now to get any benefits out of it, but.
Well, we will help you push it on here, you know we will, and as obviously on the prediction show as well, which next week is going to be Friday because of the I don't know why, it's because of what's happening. Oh, it's a transfer deadline day on Tuesday. Funny Sky, you see, messing my plans up. But
Sky, you see, when they first done it, you had an exciting program because people were buying players.
Yes.
But now it's run its course, and you don't see anybody moving. You don't see no big names, no big signings anymore.
I don't know if you remember. We need the purple dildo back, don't we?
We do.
Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Just anybody's watching. It was a thing that happened on Sky TV. Yeah. But no,
football needs to get itself back.
It
needs to get back to its roots.
It needs to come back. I mean, all that time when we had COVID, we missed the fans, and it's the fans that are important. And that is it bollocks. I mean, as soon as we got back, it was back to all television wants this and television wants that. So, but it's a vicious circle we've got ourselves in. But
I always remember when it first started. I'd finished football. I played for Birmingham All Stars, and we played a game before the night match before the main game, and there was people with clipboards telling us, right, you have to be in 10 seconds. You have to be here in 10 seconds. You have to be there. And I'm thinking, man, what's this all about? And they run it to the exact second, and you know, and it's terrible.
It does restrict the individuality and the creativity of players out as well. You know, but there we go.
It does. The thing that sickens me as well is you've got ex-pros, a lot of ex-pros now doing, you know, the commentaries and doing all the shows and whatever, but they will never, ever stick on the football side of it, stay on the football side. They will stay on whoever they're working for. They won't say anything. They won't say anything wrong. It's like they're told what to say, and so they don't upset, you know, who they're working for or somebody else. And, you know, the only one that does it is, like, well, the two is... You know, you got Graham Souness and you got Roy Keane.
Yeah. Oh, well, I'm just watching at the moment. I was about to say, I think it was the opening match, Argentina playing, was it Saudi Arabia in the opening game of the World Cup, and them two having the argument at half time. That was more fun than the match.
Graham Souness was scary. When you used to play against him, you could hear him behind you, grunting, trying to get you. And that was from 10 yards away. And what a solid guy he was, you know.
But I remember I was just going to say, because I worked for Blackburn Rovers for a while, and he came in as the manager. And I was in sales. I wasn't, you know, anything, you know, a player or anything, but in sales. And they just came around and introduced him to sort of, you know, all the staff. And my God, I was literally shaking his hand, because he just had that presence about him.
Yeah, that's it. That was him. That was the guy.
Yeah.
But that's what used to make it good, because you know that you're in for a battle every week when we played, no matter who the players were. I remember when I played Coventry, I got smashed into the wall. And he came over and picked me up, and he goes, remember the name, Stuart Pearce? And then 10 minutes later, I'll smack him into the wall and went over, remember the name, Steve Lornix?
Nice one.
And you shake your hands. You know, I was a winger, but I brought my nose 9 times. I had my ear ripped off. I brought my back, brought my ribs, had a few teeth knocked out. We was playing Sheffield Wednesday, and Nigel Worthington was the fullback. And he's coming, clattered me from behind with his knee right at the bottom of my back. And he broke my coccyx. And there's nothing they can do. It has to heal over time. And I think for about 4 weeks, I was tied to a chair on a rubber ring. And I had to sleep on that chair. And I had to sit there because the pain was unbelievable. It was like, you know, the equivalent to a woman having a baby. Even if you coughed or you moved, it was agony.
Wow.
All part and parcel of the game then.
But did you all come off at the end? I mean, we always say, like, oh, when you're on the pitch, you give 100%, and you come off and you shake your hands, or did you still just hate each other at the end when the whistle went?
No, you always used to shake hands. To be honest, the only aggro we've ever seen is that Liverpool came down to Leicester, and because it was Liverpool, we only had a small players' lounge. And Hansen came down like, and he wanted to get some of his cronies, and they wouldn't let him in. So when we played at Anfield after the game, they wouldn't let us into the players' lounge. And I remember Alan Young kicking off and that, you know, and Hansen, he got a beer from somewhere, Young he had, and Hansen put his foot against the door and let us in. And we just threw the beer. And it missed Hansen, went all over his missus, who was sitting there in the fur coat and everything and whatever.
No.
And, tough there, yeah. Like a bit.
You can always rely on Alan Young, can't you?
Oh, man. Godfather. Youngie was the godfather.
Bless him. But But no, I will let you go now, Steve. Thank you so much for that. Really enjoyed it. And I will see you next Friday for the prediction show.
Yes, mate. Looking forward to it. I'll try and get a few more points.
You can catch. Brad is catchable. Brad is catchable. We'll gang up. Not off there, I think. Brilliant, Steve. Thank you very much. All the best to you and your family. And keep us informed with Foxy 7. And like I say, we'll give it a push on here for you all the time. But I will see you next Friday. Thanks very much, mate. All the best.
Yeah, mate.
Bye-bye. Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Thanks to Steve there. I love talking the old days of football. I really do. But as I say, it's because I am old, I have to say. I know I don't look it. You can say that. Chris, you don't look it. But, yeah, I am. But this is what's coming up next.
Coming up next on Leicester Till I Die TV.
There is so much coming up. We're not having a preview game because we're playing Walsall, as you know, at the weekend, so in the FA Cup fourth round. So we're not going to do a preview game, basically because we don't really know that much about them. And it's different leagues, and we didn't do one for Gillingham. But we will be back Friday at 9 o'clock. With the Question Time show. We'll be talking all things Leicester City. So anything you want to ask, any questions, myself, Dave and Brad will be in there. Be sure to answer. We'll be sure to try and answer all your questions that you put to us in the chat. That is Friday night at 9 o'clock. Going to have a night off tomorrow. Then on Saturday, 12 o'clock, it's the watch along of the FA Cup fourth round. Tie between Walsall and Leicester. It is on the BBC iPlayer. And then at 4 o'clock, we will have the post-match reaction with myself and Brad. Monday, a new trio for a one-off because we're not going to have the Premier League review show to do. So we will be having a special one-off. Well, hopefully not a one-off. A new show, Room 101. Two Leicester fans coming in, and they're going to be given four or five topics, and they've got to pick a thing that goes in that topic, and I will pick a winner to go into Room 101, of course. That is on Monday at 9, and then Tuesday, 6 o'clock, we have got Transfer Deadline Day Special, and we'll be taking you hopefully Leicester way. Well, have done some signatures by then, fingers crossed, we can but hope. And then coming up, we've got David Connolly. You may remember the ex-Leicester player on that next Wednesday, a week today. We'll be chatting with him, and then the week after that, we'll be chatting with ex-player Russell Osman. So we've got some nice ex-players coming up to chat with. Be sure to get your questions in on the night in the chat, and we'll put that to the players. Thank you so much for watching, and thank you very much as well. I should just say, and I do appreciate it, and I had somebody message me just regarding...
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport, powered by fans.
Indeed. It is apparently, we're having a bit of a switch over. You know when you switch phones over and you have to wait for a code and it goes from one company to another, and you're like, for about 2 hours, you haven't got any phone signal. You're, oh, what do I do? It's a bit like that with podcasts when you swap them over. And because I'm moving to TalkSport from where my broadcaster before, there's a few teething problems. So we haven't been live. We have been live, but I haven't put any shows up. The last one was last Friday's mid-season review. That was the last one that is up. Hopefully, this one and the two others that we did this week will be up. The quiz last night, The Price is Right, and the Monday night review show will go up sometime this week. So please bear with me, but the podcasts will be back. We just, like I say, haven't been able to upload any at the moment, but we will be doing within the next, hopefully tomorrow. Fingers crossed, touch wood, and all that. Thanks very much for watching. And if you have been listening, thank you very much for sharing your ears with me for the last almost hour and a half. Thanks to Steve for popping on as always, and I will see you Friday night, 9 o'clock, we might do a press conference show, depending what time it is, but if not, see you 9 o'clock on Friday with Brad and with Dave for question time. Take care, stay safe, and remember, don't do anything I wouldn't enjoy. Good night.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport, powered by fans.
Thanks for watching Leicester Till I Die. This is Chris saying goodbye and see you next time.
Thanks for watching. These videos are tremendous. You better like them too, or I'll be back.
Leicester Till I Die TV. They think it's all over.
It's the 90th minute. All your mates around. You've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping, and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport, powered by fans.